Hey, welcome to it, everybody, and happy Friar Friday to you. It is Gwynn and Chris here on San Diego's number one sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan. Chris Ello, Tony Gwynn Jr. back home at Petco Park getting ready for tonight's game, the Padres. Yeah, actually, there is another game on the schedule. They got to play tonight. The Philadelphia Phillies come in to begin a three-game weekend series. Matt Scraby is alongside here in the Odyssey Palace Studios. And yes, I know, yesterday's loss was agonizing, and we will get to that in just a second. But I thought this note from just a little while ago deserved mention right off the top. Lamont Butler has committed in the transfer portal to play at Kentucky. And, you know, I guess I was hoping against hope that maybe somehow he'd stay at San Diego State one more year. But the fact that he's leaving, I'm so happy for him. To be able to, as Tony likes to say, get himself a bag, and also get himself, you know, on a bunch of national television games. You know, a lot of people are going to get to see Lamont Butler do his thing on a national stage. Kentucky is still, you know, quite a bit more high profile than San Diego State. But as he is on his way out of town, I think we begin by giving thanks to one of the great moments in San Diego sports history, which was provided by Lamont Butler. And Tony, wish him the best.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I think everybody was hoping that it worked out to where Lamont would be back, but Kentucky, you know, it's tough to, that's a spot where he is, you know, probably going to get paid some good coin.
Yeah,
to go play some basketball. I mean, I think I saw somewhere where his dad basically said that this came down to more of a business decision than it did anything else. And
yeah,
you have to kind of, I think we got to respect it. I mean, it's the way things move, way things operate. And he had a chance to, he's been to a national championship. He's been here. He was here with the Aztecs, what, 4 years, five years?
Gave us four pretty good years.
Yeah, I think you can make the argument he is he has done everything. He has done everything he's been obliged to do or obligated to do.
Yeah, we'll never forget him. He'll always be a legend in San Diego. And I wish Lamont best. And I wanted to start with that today. And of course, look. I mean, I'm trying to delay talking about this loss yesterday to the Rockies. So
just hop on in there, buddy.
I know we're gonna have to jump in feet first. But no matter what
you think
about what happened yesterday in Colorado, and I know so many of you disagree and think Mike Shildt is, you know, the worst manager now we've ever had here. No decision
is that the sentiment?
It's been. It seemed like it was pretty much the sentiment after that game yesterday, Tony. And we'll kick this around here in a minute, but no decision that Mike Shildt made can compare on the stupidity meter to what the Atlanta Falcons did with their first-round draft choice yesterday. Even Mel Kiper, like, took it easy on the Falcons today. Like, I read Mel Kiper's first-round recap, and, you know, he does his winners and losers in the draft, and he got to the losers, and he said, you know, I'm not even gonna just take my full shot at the Falcons. This is so obviously a dumb move that I don't even need to say anything. But they stunned the football world yesterday by taking Michael Penix. And I feel bad almost for Michael Penix. He's 24 years old, and now he's stuck behind a guy who is guaranteed $180 million over the next 4 years. Falcons defended the move, said that we're just trying to set ourselves up for the quarterback position in the future, but the future is going to be who knows how long for Michael Penix Jr. That just was a head-scratcher at the highlight last night's NFL draft coverage, which I hope you were able to enjoy some of here on 97.3 The Fan. I must applaud my guy Scraby and also Braden Suprenant, who sat with me last night. We had a lot of fun on the draft show, and hopefully you caught some of that last night.
Wait, could I didn't get to participate in any of the draft coverage,
right?
Whether it be you or I just kind of saw the highlights popping up on my phone when we were flying in. Other than the fact that they just paid Cousins a lot of money, why is everybody saying it's a bad?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, it's from what
because,
that. I mean, they just paid $180 million for their quarterback position, and the $100 million of it's guaranteed. Cousins has 4 years. Four years. Now, maybe he plays two. Maybe he plays three. Michael Penix
fully guaranteed.
He's got two fully guaranteed years. Michael Penix Jr. is already 24 years old. So by the time he, the earliest he would get into the starting lineup is 26 or 27 years old. The Falcons have so many, you know, glaring weaknesses on that squad. It just seemed kind of a crazy move to make. Even the general manager was seen on Twitter trying to explain the move to his own owner.
We don't know exactly what was going on, but there's a lot of hand gestures and there's a lot of
quizzical looks on Arthur Blank's face as to what in the world are we doing here. We'll see if it works out. But even if Michael Penix becomes, you know, the starting quarterback and goes on to a Hall of Fame career, then that tells me they wasted $180 million on Kirk Cousins. So it just seemed like a very odd thing to do. Our guy, Adam Klug, the biggest Falcon fan I've ever known, I think he was ready to denounce his love for the Falcons.
I hope it works then. I hope it works so well. I really hope it works.
He was so upset. All right, we've waited long enough, Tony. Let's jump into the eighth inning and the game that got away in Denver yesterday. I want to just hit it head on. To the people that have been, you know, were calling into the shows yesterday after the game, those that have been on Twitter, and everybody, even the media. I mean, Dennis Lynn was quite critical, or seemed to be quite critical, of Mike Shildt in the post-game press conference yesterday. What in the world were we doing with Wandy Peralta in the game after he'd given up a home run? And it was clear, I guess, and I love Mike Shildt, you know, attacking the question. But Dennis Lynn said, you know, it looked like he didn't have his best stuff. And that was Mike Shildt saying, well, that was your opinion. Look, Tony, there's a couple of things here. First of all, you bring him into the game because he's been your eighth inning guy all year, and he's been lights out good. There's two on. There's one out. He gives up a three-run homer to the first batter he faces. A lot of people thought, well, that's clear that he doesn't have his best stuff. Well, even if you think he doesn't have his best stuff, the rules of baseball state that he had to stay in for the next two hitters. You can't take him out after the home run anyway, even if that's what you truly wanted to do, because in baseball you have to face at least three hitters. The next two guys got on. Now, that took us to the number two spot in the Rockies' batting order, and a right-handed hitting Brendan Doyle. And the critics again say, well, what in the world was he still in there facing Doyle for? And I say that he was in there facing Doyle, A, trying to get him out, get a double play grounder and end the inning, but B, because a left-handed hitter, Ryan McMahon, was on deck, and Mike Shildt wanted to still have Peralta in the game to face him. And as it turned out, he did face McMahon, and he did strike him out. So, you know, it didn't work. They eventually brought Kolek into the ballgame to face the right-handed batter. And guess what happened there?
Surrendered a single.
Gave up, yeah, a single double, I think it was, actually, double. To Diaz, yeah, that brought across, you know, the eventual winning run. The manager, and we've said this 100 times, Tony, the manager never looks good when the guys he puts in don't get the job done. Well, but I just don't understand this extreme criticism of the manager as if somehow he was the one who blew a five-run lead.
If I'm being completely honest, I didn't see any of it. I just heard about the presser after.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was kind of a whack question, I must say. Like, I mean, I feel like if you're going to ask that question, that should be followed up with whatever you thought the idea was behind keeping it in there. Because, you know, as you said, he surrendered the three-run shot on the first batter he saw. So if we're going with, oh, it was clear at that point he didn't have his best stuff after one batter, I think that's just that's wishful thinking on your part, thinking that you've been able to figure that out at one batter. Now he has to face three anyway.
Yeah.
Right. And to your point, McMahon is behind Doyle, who, you know, for the most part has been a pretty light hitting outfielder, not to mention Peralta's numbers against righties going into that appearance was phenomenal. And so, you know, he ends up facing the lefty, gets to punchy. That would, I think that would end his, that would end his day at that point. Or his, yeah, and so yeah. Colick came in, he surrendered. It's just, you know, what I think people are forgetting is that they're in a stretch right now where they haven't had any off days. So these arms that they have been using are you know, you're running up against the, some maxes here, right, where you're trying to not use guys because you still got another six games to get through without one of those off days. So, you know, it's just a natural – in today's, you know, sports world, this is the natural overreaction.
Well, even if you want to remain critical of Mike Shildt and not be a Mike Shildt fan any longer because you think he boxed up the bottom of the eighth inning, and I hopefully we just explained to you why I don't think he did, but I think you've got to like his feistiness. And we talked about this before the season, Tony, that he is a mild-mannered, fun, kind of a funny guy. But he's got some game in him, and I appreciate the fact that he's sticking up for his players, and he's sticking up for his ball club, and he's not going to sit there and let somebody be critical of their performance in a situation where a game was lost.
It's not, this isn't video games. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, you know, I know you'd like to believe you just roll in anybody. Oh, seven, eight bad pitches. Got to go get him. You can't. First, it's against the rules. A, B, you just, you know, you're managing beyond that game. But quite frankly, Peralta was the right dude. He didn't get the job done. You know, it's that simple. Earlier in the game, Eggy Rosario, dude doesn't. We don't. They never asked to bunt. He's asked to get a bunt down. Got the job done. Got the bunt down. We end up scoring. You know, guys are paid to do a job, and in this case, somebody didn't get the job done. It's that simple. There's never going to be – the only way it's perfect is when it works out.
Yeah.
Well, otherwise, this is kind of how it goes.
It was a frustrating loss. I will say that. I mean,
no doubt.
Regardless of how it turned, you know, but I just wanted to take time, and I think you're agreeing with me, to really take a look back at the eighth inning and try to understand exactly what was going on here before we all just fly off the handle and say that Mike Shildt can't manage.
I'm only talking about in terms of blaming Mike Shildt for the loss. The loss is plenty, you know, upsetting in itself. And the reason why is because they didn't get the outs that they needed to in that eighth inning. Wandy Peralta was asked to come in. He's been, one of the most reliable relievers the Padres have. They go to him in the eighth to get the job done. He didn't get it done. That simple.
Yeah, I agree with you, Tony. Now, a couple of other things. First of all, Eniel De Los Santos. Faced four batters, punchy all four. I don't know that it's not time to start saving this guy now for the eighth inning.
It was
a high leverage spot that he came in,
I will say
that. But I would have liked to have him behind Peralta. And I wonder if now, you know, I think we kind of share the eighth inning with Peralta and De Los Santos because he looks like he needs to be in there in a little more high leverage in the fifth or sixth inning.
I don't doubt it. I mean, is a good example of you can't judge a spring by anything.
Yeah,
because
right.
He didn't look as sharp. The ball wasn't coming out the same, but it seems like the more reps he's gotten, the sharper he's gotten, the more crisp. I mean, he was throwing that slider. That didn't look fun to face at all. He was throwing it at about 89, 90. He was running the heater up there. He becomes more impressive, I feel like, the more you see him.
Yeah, he looked great yesterday, but they didn't have him to go to in the eighth inning. And if you really had to take Peralta out, your other option was Colick, who did come in and immediately surrender a hit. So, it's revisionist history to say that, you know, Shildt did everything wrong yesterday. It didn't work out, that's for sure.
I would say it's a tough loss. I would say, you know, Steven hasn't, you know, earned the right yet to pitch in that late eighth inning time period, you know, unless a case of emergency, which that was yesterday. Wandy had lost it at that point. You know, you bring him in, but I think those roles are earned. And that's why you saw Wandy into that spot right there. And you know what? You're probably right. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Inyel has found his way, it will find his way back into that eighth spot, especially keep throwing the ball the way he has.
No question, Tony. Last thing on this game. You were with this ball club on the way home. How did, just taking a look, feel like they're able to flush it? I guess we'll find out starting tonight. Yeah. But a loss like that to me is, it stinks. But the key is not letting it become two or three losses. And that's why tonight's game becomes that more, much more important.
I 1,000% agree. I don't think that there was any. It didn't seem to be. I mean, these guys. I know it might be surprising, but a lot of times you get on this plane. It by the time they've gotten on there, and, you know, especially this early, they've already moved on to the next one. So
I like to hear that. Actually.
This one, you know, those type of losses sting a little bit longer. You're maybe a little bit more pissed after the game, but again, by the time you hop on that plane. I think that most of those guys have kind of started to turn the page already.
Right. But I haven't, Tony. Yes, I haven't turned the page.
And that's why we were turned your mic off during the first segment of the show.
What?
Because we knew that you'd be screaming
some of the comments on the chat.
About what happened last night.
It's pretty split. Mike Schilt did the right thing. It's early. Let's just wait and see what happens. And then there's some people that are saying that this was the wrong decision and they shouldn't have lost that game. So
no, I think that last part is spot on all the way around. They should not have lost that game, period.
But period. They did. And they are sitting here at 14-14.
As the young folks say.
Yeah, same record as they had through 28 games last year, by the way.
Really?
That's for those that are wondering, tonight it'll be Joe Musgrove. It'll be Aaron Nola. Pretty good pitching matchup tonight.
Yes,
out
indeed.
At Qualcomm Stadium. Or Qualcomm Stadium. We're talking. I know. I'm in a time machine somehow.
What part of your memory did that come from?
The deep
the 1998
right,
one?
Yeah. Way back when. Petco Park, I think, will be the site of tonight's game. I hope it is because that's where Tony is. And the Phillies and the Padres start a three-game series. All right, there's a ton going on. We're going to get back into the draft a little bit as the show goes along. We're going to talk about, more baseball, of course. And we're also going to get a check in a little bit. I'm trying to avoid this subject as well, but... The NBA playoffs.
Don't avoid it. Go ahead, man. I'm open arms. It's a wrap. It's all good. Look, come on.
Wow.
All right. Well, we'll come to that.
Sounds
in the
like
next
someone's trying to convince themselves.
Yeah, we'll come to that in the next.
No
segment.
Need to convince. It's already happening.
Tyler Wade will be our Friar Friday interview. The Padres third baseman, who has done a really, really good job so far here with the Padres in the month of April. He'll be our guest coming up in a little while. We'll get our Daily Gambit, our Big Five, and a countdown today as well. So it's Friar Friday. Sit back, relax, enjoy the proceedings here. Chrisello, Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby, Gwynn and Chris, 97.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
2:25 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chrisello, Matt Scraby. Mr. Ello thinks that... we can't talk NBA.
I think we can. I just, I was trying to be kind.
Yeah, you don't have to be kind. My team doesn't deserve kindness right now.
Well, you know, we were doing the draft show last night, and we had the game on kind of in the background, and they're cruising along up by 12. And then all of a sudden, man, Denver just hit the gas. And all of a sudden, I look up, and LeBron's dribbling the ball off his leg, and they're throwing the ball out of bounds, and the Lakers are unraveling. And, I'm believing now that Denver really just does have their number because
I think
the Lakers, I honestly expected them to make a big series out of this. And now, you know, unless something historic happens, Denver's going to move on because nobody's ever come from 3-0 in the NBA.
Imagine trying to listen to that while driving. Like, you can't see pictures.
Yeah.
Like, is this the Twilight Zone? LeBron is dribbling the ball off of his leg? Like,
yeah.
I can't understand this.
Yeah. It was weird to watch. And once Denver got the lead, you could see the Lakers saying, here we go again.
That's how can't you? It's human nature at this point.
Yeah.
What I was thinking.
It's unbelievable. What is it, 12, 13 in a row now over the last two seasons? I mean, you know, LeBron James too good to allow one team to beat him 12 straight times, but that's what's happened here.
It's the first and only team that has beaten him 12 times.
No kidding.
That's crazy.
Yeah, the 0-3 stat, by the way, it's been 151 times in NBA history, and nobody's ever done it, coming from 3-0 down. So, like I said, unless it's historic, the Lakers season's going to end. What did you think about Joel? Did you see Joel Embiid down on the ground? He looked like he was on the floor, and he grabbed the ankles or the legs of, I guess it was Robinson of the Knicks, the big center,
and tried to
pull him down to the ground. He looked to me like Jeff Van Gundy back in the day trying to take a
Alonzo
bite
Mourning.
Out of the leg of Alonzo Mourning. The Knicks were not too pleased with Joel Embiid, but they were probably less pleased with the fact he scored 50 points and led the 76ers to a victory.
And if I'm not mistaken, he has, like, Bell's palsy?
Yes, I read that. And
like, left side of his face?
He just got diagnosed with it, like, a couple of weeks ago. And apparently it's a mild case, but I think, it's everything's mild when it doesn't happen to you.
100%.
You know? So, I kind of hope the best for Joel Embiid here.
I'm not sure what this
is all about.
To answer your question, I didn't see the actual play. I saw some chatter about it, but it never goes over my head that a lot of these things happen during this time of year. Like a lot of the craziness happens when people are at their most desperate to win. It seems like
that's why I watch. I mean, that's why the NBA is so fun to watch at this time of year, because you're getting that kind of an effort.
Yeah.
And that kind of a desperation. And when you get a team down 2-0 like the Sixers are, Joel Embiid is going to do whatever he's got to do to try to keep you from scoring. And if that includes dragging you down to the ground while he's on the ground, so be it. that's the way the NBA works. I love this time of year. So we'll see now. The Clippers got the Dallas again tonight. For game three in Dallas this time. I commented on this yesterday, Tony, and you weren't here. Luka Doncic, are you a big fan, kind of a fan, or starting to get a little bit perturbed by some of his antics?
Your Honor, can I object for leading the witness here?
I know, I'm leading the witness.
I was waiting for Tony's face because I knew where this was going. But
Tony,
Chris,
I said antics.
Chris has not gotten over this yet.
I haven't. He
to
screamed
answer your
to the
question,
crowd that he was this, that, and the other after he hit that shot the other night. I just think he needs to just play ball, Luca. Please.
I don't know that I'm a must-see TV, but I enjoy watching the play.
Yeah,
and I enjoy some good banter from time to time, because I can only imagine in today's world of sports, live entertainment, the type of things that are being said to him on the court that would make him respond in the way that he has.
You know what? That might be fair. I mean, I can't imagine there weren't some courtside Clipper fans that were screaming at him all night long.
in Los Angeles? Come on, man. So. You already know the answer.
Yeah. All right. I'll give him a little bit of a pass, but I'd like to see Luka just play ball. He is great to watch. Kawhi Leonard, I'd like to see him be able to play free and easy. He looked very rusty in game two, understandable, but they need him to be back.
Yeah, no, it's that's tough because he's basically having to get in shape while the round is happening because he's missed so much time. And so Joel Embiid's basically having to do this. He looked like he was about to kill over a few different times in that game. But, you know, 50 points, I guess, says otherwise. Either way, I just think that's particularly in Kawhi's case because it's the knee, probably wasn't able to do much of anything while, you know, it tried to get rid of that inflammation. He's having to, like, get in condition while the series is going.
Yeah, Clippers and Dallas tonight, that's a 5 o'clock. They actually have a game at 2:30 this afternoon, which I think is a strange start time. Milwaukee and Indiana tip off shortly in Indianapolis with, again, Giannis out of the lineup for the Milwaukee Bucks. So we'll keep a little eye on that game. But the NBA playoffs, I love it. And, you know, especially as they get into this, you know, these series and some of the hatred starts to build up, it makes for fun games. So.
Yep, no doubt. All right, let's get to break. When we come back, we have a big five headed your way. A little earlier than normal, but sometimes we got to make adjustments. More Gwen and Chris on the way.
All right, here we go at 2:38. Welcome back to Gwen and Chris. Crisello, Tony Gwynn Jr. at Petco Park, or is it Qualcomm Stadium? As I said earlier. Yeah. Crazy. Matt Scraby, speaking of crazy, alongside here.
Hey.
In the Odyssey Palace Studios.
Hey.
Last night was our NFL draft coverage. The draft does continue. Rounds 2 and 3. A little bit later on, you got to be a crazy draft Nick, though, I think, now to be really following these picks closely. But I'm sure some of you will do that. My favorite tweet of the day was one that said the Atlanta Falcons are planning to take quarterback Spencer, Rattler. Falcons are planning to take Spencer Rattler with their second round pick because they want to make sure they're prepared for the post Michael Penix era.
Nice one, Chris.
Got
nice
a lot
one.
Of likes. I didn't say it. I'm just
you did
reading
say it,
it
actually.
To you.
You just said it.
All right, let's get to the Big Five before I get.
I have breaking news for the Big Five, too.
Get angry.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, it's not often that we get breaking news right before the Big Five, but we did today, and so I'm skipping your Jake Cronenworth 2 option, Chris, and I'm going to go with the news that Manny Machado is making his return to third base today. He is also batting cleanup in the lineup. Graham Pauly is going to be the DH. The rest of the lineup, Bogarts, Tatis, Cronenworth, Machado, Profar, Kim, Campusano, Pauly, and Azokar with Joe Musgrove pitching. So, Chris, my question is, I don't have a question. Just go ahead and talk, Chris.
Well,
what do you think?
First of all, we visited with Tyler Wade, an interview here in a little while on our Friar Friday interview a little while ago, and he kind of let that slip to us during the interview that because I asked him about playing third base on a team that has Manny Machado, and he said, well, Manny's back in there tonight. So that got me thinking, whoa, maybe Manny's playing third base. This is great. I just love to watch him play third base. It immediately makes the Padres a better defensive team. And, you know, it'll be interesting. Now, Graham Pauly gets a DH call tonight. But, you know, we'll see where they go, you know, moving forward with this DH spot. I think it's wide open, and I think you'll see a lot of Tyler Wade, and I think you'll see some Eggy Rosario. And I think, as Tony pointed out, I don't think you're going to see Manny at third base every night. So it's just let's, you know, hopefully he gets through and feels good after the game. That's my thought. Those are my thoughts.
What are your thoughts, Tony?
I agree, man. I think this is great. See him back out there at third, and Based on the workload we saw him have, I know he stepped away, for the last 4 days for the birth of a child. But I think, for the most part, he was on pace to be at the end of the month. We are at the 26th, which is about the end of the month. So it's good to have him back in his position. He was already starting to swing the bat better prior to it. You know, does this give it a little boost? There is a little... some ramifications to the roster, sure, in the next day or so. Or, next couple hours or so.
Somebody's got to be sent down, yeah?
Right, yeah.
Because Manny was not on the active roster.
And it sounds like he was able to do some baseball stuff in the last couple of days. So this is a good thing for the Pods. Everybody kind of slots back. Remember, they just played a whole series without him. I know that might have got lost in all of that. All of a sudden, you add him back into that lineup, and it looks different just with him in it, a lot different.
Trying to see the corresponding moves. All right, so Manny reinstated, Jeremiah Estrada recalled from AAA El Paso, Matthew Batten and Randy Vasquez optioned to El Paso.
There you have it.
So lots of ramifications, so easy for me to say.
Number four.
The first round of the 2024 NFL draft was filled with a few big surprises that started with the Falcons taking Michael Penix Jr. with the number 8 pick. That shocker was bookended by the Bills trading back at number 28 with the Kansas City Chiefs, allowing KC to take the fastest receiver in the draft in Xavier Worthy. The GM of the Bills is having to defend himself because he traded with a conference rival. And he said, quote, "I could see them taking a receiver, but you don't truly know. But where they were moving from, I don't think it mattered to us who they were picking. Now we've got the 2 twos, a 3, a 4, and 4 fives. I think that gives us a chance to fill some roles or use ammo to move around again, depending on how the board falls." Tony, did the Bills help the Chiefs get better?
I mean, let's keep it a buck. The Bills weren't going to be that good this year. They're not going to be contending, I don't think, to deal with Buffalo. They've lost everybody on their defense that has made them a powerhouse. They now have lost their best wide receiver and their second best wide receiver. So, no, I don't think. Yes, I know. People may have kind of old expectations, but this is a new Buffalo Bills. This is not a team that is competing on the Kansas City Chief level, I don't believe. And so I think this is a good move by the GM to go out and secure some picks so he can start to restock everything that they've lost in this offseason so far.
What do you think, Chris? Did the Bills help the Chiefs get better?
I don't know that they helped them, because I don't know that we can look into a crystal ball and guarantee that the Chiefs wouldn't have ended up with Xavier Worthy anyway. They didn't think so, so that's why the Chiefs moved up 4 spots and wanted to make sure they got him. I don't know, would Dallas have taken him? Already with CeeDee Lamb?
Dallas will take the fastest person there. So.
Well, I think this is a good move for the Chiefs to go ahead and get this guy, stretch the field. He's not going to be Tyreek Hill, few guys are, but he's fast enough to give a lot more operating room to the likes of Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce. So I think it's good for Kansas City. Buffalo has to do what's best for them. And I don't think you – I at least don't think you sit there as a Buffalo and say, well, I can't make this deal, which is going to be really good for my organization, because I'm worried about what Kansas City is going to take. Got to look out for number one.
Number three.
Zipping my lips. I'm just kidding. I don't really have any opinion. For the first time since 2019, Major League Baseball is going to dedicate 3 days in August to players, focusing on showcasing them beyond their stats and on-field performances. From August 16th through the 18th, a different aspect of their lives is going to be highlighted through in-stadium events, game broadcasts, and social media. The goal of the weekend is to reach younger audiences, which have been growing over the past several years. And according to league data, the median age of ticket purchasers has dropped from 51 to 45 years old since 2019, while ticket buyers from ages 18 to 35 has increased by almost 10% during that same time frame. So they're hoping that trend continues. Chris, do you think this is a way to get younger fans?
You're going to have to give it to me again, because it was a lot there that I didn't quite...
Okay, basically...
I didn't grab that.
Basically, remember Players Weekend? I didn't grab that.
Yeah.
Remember Players Weekend in 2019 where they wore the black jerseys and they had their names? That's where Dick Mountain came from?
Yes, everybody put their own name and nickname
on. Yeah, I don't know that they're
jersey.
Allowing nicknames again. I'm not sure on that, but they're doing that again because they want... They're seeing the trends of younger people buying tickets.
Okay.
And so they're trying to get younger people more involved.
Yeah, well, if they really want younger... people to buy tickets, they'll find some prices that are less than $65 a ticket.
That's a fantastic point.
So I don't know how badly they really want younger people to buy tickets. You got to continue to skew a little bit younger and try to give the younger fan what they want, and I think they like that with the nicknames and the players having a little more say in what things look like. I think that's all part of the jersey, you know, the City Connect thing is for younger fans. I don't think the old stodgy get-off-the-lawn people really care if teams have 19 different uniforms, but I think the younger folks do. So, yeah, keep doing it. But if you really want to help young people out, you know, have a $10 ticket somewhere where they can still get into the ballpark. That will skew younger people buying tickets.
That's a good point, yes. Tony, do you think this will help get younger people to the games?
I don't know. I don't know that even they are doing the same thing. My understanding is that they're not doing nicknames.
Yeah.
The uniforms aren't changing. Remember, they used to do those, like, Little League style, you know, uniform. I don't believe they're doing that.
It's a Rob Manfred idea for sure.
The one other thing that used to be popular was that they could wear any color shoes they want. Well, they already can do that now. So I don't know how this is attracting younger... You know, a younger demographic. But I also don't know everything that it entails. So I'll leave my opinion for after the week or weekend, whatever it is, goes by.
Great. I will put in my calendar on August 19th. I need to ask Tony about Players Weekend.
Yeah, that'll work.
Number two.
Caleb Williams was not only the number one NFL draft pick, but he also introduced his girlfriend to the world. Did you guys see this? He has a girlfriend. Her name is, I'm going
Wait, did he look to the camera? He said, listen here, world, I want to introduce you to my girlfriend. Is that how this went down?
That's how I imagine it, yes.
Oh, okay.
No,
this is how it went down in Scraby's mind.
No, this is People.com, an article earlier today introducing us to Alina Thiergod. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, so I'm sorry, Alina. But she and Caleb Williams have supposedly been dating since November of 2023, and he has shared some pictures over the last few months, but no one really officially knew who she was. She was covering her face in a lot of the pictures, you know, trying to be funny, like behind a plant or something, which is kind of funny. But my question has nothing to do with Caleb Williams himself. My question is, Tony's like, what?
I kind of wish it did have to do with Caleb Williams, because I'm not sure where this one's going to end up going.
Here's where I... Okay. So one time, I went to a wedding with someone I only knew for 1 month. All of those pictures are with us, and it ended horribly, and I don't like looking at those pictures anymore.
Well, you brought somebody you'd been dating for a month to a wedding.
To a wedding, and now she's in every single picture that was taken on that day.
Okay.
And so is Caleb Williams' girlfriend. She is in every single picture. So my question to you, Tony, is how long do you have to be with somebody to take them to a big event?
Man. To be honest, it's been a long time since I had to, like, do any calculations on if I have to take somebody to an event.
Well, I'm saying would you wait 6 months to take your wife to, like, an MLB draft?
I guess it would depend on the wedding, right? Like, whose wedding? Am I close to the individual? Maybe she's invited, too. I don't know. Like, it would depend if I would show up. You know, I don't know. I guess if we've been dating, I don't know, 3 months, okay. 4 months.
That's fair. That's fair. You know enough about that person at that point to see.
Yeah, that you
to
know,
know,
they
if
know
you're
how
go
to act
a little
at
further.
Right. Exactly.
Chris, how long do you need to know someone before you take him to the NFL draft?
To the NFL draft.
Wait, NFL draft? I thought
no,
we were talking
I know,
weddings.
I know. We're just talking about yes, weddings.
Yeah, this is just a crazy question.
It's not a crazy question because
it is because
forevermore
it's
his girlfriend
crazy.
Is going to be in the pictures
You're,
with him.
So what?
When they show his draft day,
so
when he
what?
Gets the call, he's going to stand up
and he's going to hug her. What if they break up and he hates her and she, or she hates him? And
well,
then
you know what? Then he should never take a picture with her because they could get married and be together for 10 years and then they could still break up after that. So should Tom Brady have never posed with Giselle for a photo throughout his entire career because they might break up someday?
I don't know.
This question just...
Teach him a little something.
No,
Chris?
I'm not saying Caleb Williams did anything wrong.
He didn't, number one. Number two, everybody's situation varies. Some people are together for a year and aren't anywhere near as close with their significant others as those who are together for 3 months.
I agree.
So
it's a case-by-case basis.
It's a case-by-case basis, but go with who you're with and let it play out from there.
Oh, man, Boogie brings up a great... reference. Remember when Russell Wilson was drafted and his wife is sitting next to him and she's like the most exciting person on the earth and then she ended up cheating on him and they got divorced and it was a horrible time.
That's life. Yeah. That's life.
It's really funny that, though, that picture comes up all the time of her being like, I hit the jackpot! Sorry.
Well, I don't
well,
know that
you're basically
yeah,
trying to
I don't
compare
know that
this
that
young
was her thought process
and say that she was looking into the camera saying I hit the jackpot.
Okay,
and I think that's where this is really coming from.
How long does she need to be around
before she deserves this kind of recognition?
No. I'm just waiting for them to break up so I can make a pass at her. Okay.
Yeah. Whatever.
I'm not saying he did anything wrong. For the record, I just referenced my wedding that I went to and thought that's kind of weird because you know he's gonna be in all these pictures with her. So anyway,
number one,
let's talk about Tom Brady. Chris just brought Tom Brady up. I just got a scraby ... on the chat. Even the chat is turning against me at this point. 7-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Tom Brady left collectors who paid $3,600 for his autograph disgruntled after they alleged his sloppy penmanship ruined pieces of treasured memorabilia. Glenn Gagnon is a memorabilia collector.
Glenn.
And he said, it's the same thing as being in a graveyard or cemetery and knocking over stones or defacing them. That's what Brady did. So he's comparing that,
what does that
to...
mean?
He's basically saying Brady ruined his most prized possessions.
Okay.
Now, I hope you got a little more information.
Yes, the memorabilia Gagnon brought to the event included a seat back from Gillette Stadium designed for owner Robert Kraft in 2002. It's a weird item to have.
Brady's seat back.
Designed for Robert Kraft's butt, I guess. Brady's game-worn cleats from the 2018 NFL season. That's not weird. And an unused book of New England Patriots tickets from the 2001-02 season he called priceless because there's only two in existence. He went on to say, these pieces were like the holy grail of my collection. I've been collecting for 40 years. I am a diehard collector.
What happened?
Tom Brady...
He didn't sign it clean and clear enough for this guy.
Yes, they're saying...
Oh, my Lord.
They're saying that he purposefully defaced the item.
Oh. So he got paid and said, you know what? I want everybody to think I'm the worst signature on the planet. I'm just going to do this on purpose.
I believe it does. I believe a dad and their son paid $18,000 to go there and get stuff signed. So he gave a speech at some point during the event, and that was part of the ticket and like a lunch with Tom Brady. And they said everything was great, except for the signatures. So, Chris, do these people have a case in your courtroom?
No, these people need a life.
Yes.
They need a life. I'm so tired of people trying to get rich off other people's signatures. You know what? Great that you have the memorabilia. But buyer beware. And if you're going to pay, how much? Just to go...
$3,600 was the ticket price.
Sit near Tom Brady and get him signed something. Guess what? You should know that there's going to be hundreds upon hundreds of other people there doing the same thing, which means Tom Brady isn't going to have a half an hour to sit there and make his signature perfect for you.
It does look like one of these things, like a quick like scribble and get out of my way. Scribble.
Okay, so I am almost positive that there are however many signatures he has, a lot of them look just like
Probably. And
okay,
the fact that
if you got the same signature as Jake Smith in New England, what difference does it make?
I don't know.
You got literally the same signature.
Because you're right, Chris. This is all for resale, and no one can prove, even though Tom Brady did actually sign it. So Glenn's very mad. The event is very
mad. Hang with him, Glenn.
But, yeah, that's it for the Big Five.
Get out of my courtroom, Glenn.
Nate says rich people problems. Totally.
Right. No kidding. No kidding.
He signed 18 my Robert
grand?
Kraft seat cushion wrong.
You gotta go, Chris.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's that time of the show when we check on the latest in sports. Only the most important topics and questions are brought to light.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
These news stories will astound and amaze you. The one, the only.
Oh my God, who the hell cares?
The Big Five starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, it's not often that we get breaking news right before the Big Five, but we did today, and so I'm skipping your Jake Cronenworth 2-0, Chris, and I'm going to go with the news that Manny Machado is making his return to third base today. He is also batting cleanup in the lineup. Graham Pauly is going to be the DH. The rest of the lineup, Bogarts, Tatis, Cronenworth, Machado, Profar, Kim, Campusano, Pauly, and Azokar with Joe Musgrove pitching. So, Chris, my question is... I don't have a question. Just go ahead and talk, Chris.
Well,
what do you think?
First of all, we visited with Tyler Wade, an interview you'll hear in a little while on our Friar Friday interview a little while ago, and he kind of let that slip to us during the interview that because I asked him about playing third base on a team that has Manny Machado, and he said, well, Manny's back in there tonight. So that got me thinking, whoa, maybe Manny's playing third base. This is great. I just love to watch him play third base. It immediately makes the Padres a better defensive team, and you know, it'll be interesting. Now, Graham Pauly gets a DH call tonight, but you know, we'll see where they go. You know, moving forward with this DH spot, I think it's wide open, and I think you'll see a lot of Tyler Wade, and I think you'll see some Eggy Rosario. And I think, as Tony pointed out, I don't think you're going to see Manny at third base every night. So it's just let's, you know, hopefully he gets through and feels good after the game. That's my thought. Those are my thoughts.
What are your thoughts, Tony?
I agree, man. I think this is great. See him back out there at third, and based on the workload we saw him have, I know he stepped away, you know, for the last 4 days to for the birth of a child, but I think for the most part he was on pace to be at the end of the month. We are at the 26th, which is about the end of the month, so it's good to have him back in his position. He was already starting to swing the bat better prior to it. You know, does this give it a little boost? There is a little, there's a little bit of, how do you say this? Some ramifications to the roster, sure, in the next day or so, next couple hours or so.
Somebody's got to be sent down, yeah?
Right, yeah.
Because Manny was not on the active roster.
And it sounds like he was able to do some baseball stuff in the last couple of days. So this is a good thing for the Pods. Everybody kind of slots back. Remember, they just played a whole series without him. I know that might have got lost in all of that. All of a sudden, you add him back into that lineup, and you know it looks different just with him in it, a lot different.
Trying to see the corresponding moves. All right, so Manny reinstated, Jeremiah Estrada recalled from AAA El Paso, Matthew Batten and Randy Vasquez optioned to El Paso.
There you have it.
So, lots of ramifications, so easy for me to say.
Number four.
The first round of the 2024 NFL draft was filled with a few big surprises that started with the Falcons taking Michael Penix Jr. with the number 8 pick. That shocker was bookended by the Bills trading back at number 28 with the Kansas City Chiefs, allowing KC to take the fastest receiver in the draft in Xavier Worthy. The GM of the Bills is having to defend himself because he traded with a conference rival. And he said, quote, "I could see them taking a receiver, but you don't truly know. But where they were moving from, I don't think it mattered to us who they were picking. Now we've got the 2 twos, a 3, a 4, and 4 fives. I think that gives us a chance to fill some roles or use ammo to move around again, depending on how the board falls." Tony, did the Bills help the Chiefs get better?
I mean, let's keep it a buck. The Bills weren't going to be that good this year. They're not going to be contending, I don't think, to deal with Buffalo. They've lost everybody on their defense that has made them a powerhouse. They now have lost their best wide receiver
and their second best
wide receiver. So, no, I don't think. Yes, I know. You know, people may have kind of like old expectations, but this is a new Buffalo Bills. This is not a team that is competing on the Kansas City Chiefs level, I don't believe. And so I think this is a good move by the GM to go out and secure some picks so he can start to restock everything that they've lost in this offseason so far.
What do you think, Chris? Did the Bills help the Chiefs get better?
I don't know that they helped them because I don't know that we can look into a crystal ball and guarantee that the Chiefs wouldn't have ended up with Xavier Worthy anyway. They didn't think so, so that's why the Chiefs moved up 4 spots and wanted to make sure they got him. I don't know, would Dallas have taken him? Already with C.D. Lamb?
Dallas will take the fastest person there. So.
Well, I think this is a good move for the Chiefs to go ahead and get this guy, stretch the field. He's not going to be Tyreek Hill. A few guys are, but he's fast enough to give a lot more operating room to the likes of Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce, so I think it's good for Kansas City. Buffalo has to do what's best for them. And I don't think you, I at least don't think you sit there as a Buffalo and say, well, I can't make this deal, which is going to be really good for my organization because I'm worried about what Kansas City's going to take. Got to look out for number one.
Number 3.
Zipping my lips. I'm just kidding. I don't really have any opinion. For the first time since 2019, Major League Baseball is going to dedicate 3 days in August to players, focusing on showcasing them beyond their stats and on-field performances. From August 16th through the 18th, a different aspect of their lives is going to be highlighted through in-stadium events, game broadcasts, and social media. The goal of the weekend is to reach younger audiences, which have been growing over the past several years. And according to league data, the median age of ticket purchasers has dropped from 51 to 45 years old since 2019, while ticket buyers from ages 18 to 35 has increased by almost 10% during that same time frame. So they're hoping that trend continues. Chris, do you think this is a way to get younger fans?
You're going to have to give it to me again because it was a lot there that I didn't quite.
Okay, basically.
I didn't grab that.
Basically, remember Players Weekend? I didn't grab that.
Yeah.
Remember Players Weekend in 2019 where they wore the black jerseys and they had their names? That's where Dick Mountain came from?
Yes, everybody put their own name and
nickname.
Yeah,
I don't know that they're
jersey.
Allowing nicknames again. I'm not sure on that. But they're doing that again because they want. They're seeing the trends of younger people buying tickets.
Okay.
And so they're trying to get younger people more involved.
Yeah, well, if they really want younger people to buy tickets, they'll find some prices that are less than $65 a ticket.
That's a fantastic point.
So I don't know how badly they really want younger people to buy tickets. You got to continue to skew a little bit younger and try to give the younger fan what they want, and I think they like that with the nicknames and the players having a little more say in what things look like. I think that's all part of the jersey, the City Connect thing is for younger fans. I don't think the old stodgy get-off-the-lawn people really care if teams have 19 different uniforms, but I think the younger folks do. So, yeah, keep doing it. But if you really want to help young people out, have a $10 ticket somewhere where they can still get into the ballpark. That will skew younger people buying tickets.
That's a good point, yes. Tony, do you think this will help get younger people to the games?
I don't know. I don't know that even they are doing the same thing. My understanding is that they're not doing nicknames.
Yeah.
The uniforms aren't changing. Remember, they used to do those, like, Little League-style you know, uniform. I don't believe they're doing that.
It's a Rob Manfred idea for sure.
The one other thing that used to be popular was that they could wear any color shoes they want. Well, they already can do that now. So I don't know how this is attracting more younger, you know, a younger demographic. But I also don't know everything that it entails. So I'll leave my opinion for after the week or weekend, whatever it is, goes by.
Great. I will put in my calendar on August 19th. I need to ask Tony about Players Weekend.
Yeah, that'll work.
Number two.
Caleb Williams was not only the number one NFL draft pick, but he also introduced his girlfriend to the world. Did you guys see this? He has a girlfriend. Her name is,
He look to the camera? He said, listen here, world, I want to introduce you to my girlfriend. Is that how this went down?
That's how I imagine it, yes.
Oh, okay.
No,
this is how it went down in Scraby's mind.
No, this is People.com, an article earlier today introducing us to Alina Thiergod. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, so I'm sorry, Alina. But she and Caleb Williams have supposedly been dating since November of 2023, and he has shared some pictures over the last few months, but no one really officially knew who she was. She was covering her face in a lot of the pictures, you know, trying to be funny, like behind a plant or something, which is kind of funny. But my question has nothing to do with Caleb Williams himself. My question is, Tony's like, what?
I kind of wish it did have to do with Caleb Williams, because I'm not sure where this one's going to end up going.
Here's where okay. So one time, I went to a wedding with someone I only knew for 1 month. All of those pictures are with us, and it ended horribly, and I don't like looking at those pictures anymore.
Well, you brought somebody you'd been dating for a month to a wedding.
To a wedding, and now she's in every single picture that was taken on that day.
Okay.
And so is Caleb Williams' girlfriend. She is in every single picture. So my question to you, Tony, is how long do you have to be with somebody to take them to a big event?
Man. To be honest, it's been a long time since I had to, like, do any calculations on if I have to take somebody to an event.
Well, I'm saying would you wait 6 months to take your wife to, like, an MLB draft?
I guess it would depend on the wedding, right? Like, whose wedding? Am I close to the individual? Maybe she's invited, too. I don't know. Like, it would depend if I would show up. You know, I don't know. I guess if we've been dating, I don't know, 3 months, okay, 4 months.
That's fair. That's fair. You know enough about that person at that point to see. Yeah, that you to know they know how to act a little further.
Right. Exactly.
Chris, how long do you need to know someone before you take him to the NFL draft?
To the NFL draft.
Wait, NFL draft? I thought we were talking weddings.
I know. We're just talking about, yes, weddings.
Yeah, this is just a crazy question.
It's not a crazy question because
it is because
forevermore, his girlfriend is going to be in the pictures with him.
So what?
When they show his draft day, gets the call, he's going to stand up and he's going to hug her. What if they break up and he hates her or she hates him? And
well,
then
you know what? Then he should never take a picture with her because they could get married and be together for 10 years and then they could still break up after that. So should Tom Brady have never posed with Giselle for a photo throughout his entire career because they might break up someday?
I don't know.
This question just...
Teach him a little something.
No,
Chris?
I'm not saying Caleb Williams did anything wrong.
He didn't, number one. Number two, everybody's situation varies. Some people are together for a year and aren't anywhere near as close with their significant others as those who are together for 3 months.
I agree.
So
it's a case-by-case basis.
It's a case-by-case basis, but go with who you're with and let it play out from there.
Oh, man, Boogie brings up a great reference. Gosh. Remember when Russell Wilson was drafted and his wife is sitting next to him and she's like the most exciting person on the earth and then she ended up cheating on him and they got divorced and it was a horrible time.
That's life. Yeah. That's life.
It's really funny that, though, that picture comes up all the time of her being like, I hit the jackpot! Sorry.
Well, I don't know that that was her thought process.
And say that she was looking into the camera saying, I hit the jackpot.
Okay,
and I think that's where this is really coming from. And how long does she need to be around before she deserves this kind of recognition?
No. I'm just waiting for them to break up so I can make a pass at her, okay?
Yeah, whatever.
I'm not saying he did anything wrong. For the record, I just referenced my wedding that I went to and thought, that's kind of weird because, you know, he's going to be in all these pictures with her. So, anyway.
Number one.
Let's talk about Tom Brady. Chris just brought Tom Brady up. I just got a scraby ... on the chat. Even the chat is turning against me at this point. Seven-time Super Bowl winning quarterback Tom Brady left collectors who paid $3,600 for his autograph disgruntled after they alleged his sloppy penmanship ruined pieces of treasured memorabilia. Glenn Gagnon is a memorabilia collector.
Glenn.
And he said, it's the same thing as being in a graveyard or cemetery and knocking over stones or defacing them. That's what Brady did. So he's comparing
that
to... He's basically saying Brady ruined his most prized possessions.
Okay.
Now, I hope you got a little more information.
Yes, the memorabilia Gagnon brought to the event included a seat back from Gillette Stadium designed for owner Robert Kraft in 2002. It's a weird item to have.
Brady's seat back.
Designed for Robert Kraft's butt, I guess. Brady's game-worn cleats from the 2018 NFL season. That's not weird. And an unused book of New England Patriots tickets from the 2001-02 season he called priceless because there's only two in existence. He went on to say, these pieces were like the holy grail of my collection. I've been collecting for 40 years. I am a diehard collector.
What happened?
Tom Brady...
He didn't sign it clean enough for this guy.
Yes, they're saying...
Oh, my Lord.
They're saying that he purposefully defaced the item.
Oh. So he got paid and said, you know what? I want everybody to think I'm the worst signature on the planet. I'm just going to do this on purpose.
I believe a dad... I believe a dad and their son paid $18,000 to go there and get stuff signed. So he gave a speech before, or he gave a speech at some point during the event, and that was part of the ticket and like a lunch with Tom Brady. And they said everything was great, except for the signatures. So, Chris, do these people have a case in your courtroom?
No, these people need a life.
Yes.
They need a life. I'm so tired of people trying to get rich off other people's signatures. You know what? Great that you have the memorabilia, but buyer beware. And if you're going to pay, how much? Just to go...
$3,600 was the ticket price.
Sit near Tom Brady and get him signed something. Guess what? You should know that there's going to be hundreds upon hundreds of other people there doing the same thing, which means Tom Brady isn't going to have a half an hour to sit there and make his signature perfect for you.
It does look like one of these things, like a quick like scribble and get out of my way.
Okay, so I am almost positive that there are however many signatures he has, a lot of them look just like
And okay, the so fact that
if you got the same signature as Jake Smith in New England, what difference does it make?
I don't know.
You got literally the same signature.
Because you're right, Chris. This is all for resale, and no one can prove, even though Tom Brady did actually sign it. So Glenn's very mad. The event is very
mad. Hang with
him,
Glenn.
But, yeah, that's it for the big fight.
Get out of my courtroom, Glenn.
Nate says rich people problems. Totally.
Right. No kidding.
He signed 18 my
grand?
Robert Kraft seat cushion wrong.
You got to go, Chris.